The hardest part was figuring out where to go. I didn't want to explain military life before talking about what I needed. Safeguard Veterans connected me to people and resources that understood military life. That made taking the next step easier.
You served others. Let your community support you. Visit safeguardveterans.net and click on your city. Safeguard Veterans. Any door, the right support.
Blog Talk Radio.
I'm Welcome to Game Math. It's Sunday morning, and this is when we have Game Math on the Off Limits show. So thanks for joining me tonight. If you want to call in, the number is 323-843-6160, and I'm happy to take your call if you have anything you want to add to the show tonight. It is St. Patrick's Day today, so I hope everybody's going to wear their green. And I always say I have my eyes, so I'm always covered on St. Patrick's Day. but sometimes I actually do wear something green. But I don't know. I don't really follow it. Most of the time I completely forget it exists, the whole holiday. It's kind of stupid, I mean. But it's interesting to me that they have a holiday, you know, for Catholics, or Catholic, specifically Irish Catholics. And but they don't really have one for Black people or Italians or Jews. I mean, they have them for Jews, I'm just saying. I mean, like, one that everybody celebrates and has a parade for. I just think it's interesting. But it's a fun holiday because everybody drinks. That's why it's so popular, right? So, I mean, if you have a holiday where everybody gets drunk, I mean, it's going to be pretty pretty popular for people. So I certainly do celebrate it when I think about it. But tomorrow we're just going to have dinner at the house and watch TV or movie or something. I'm not really going to do anything big. My mom's coming over for dinner tomorrow, so making dinner for her. She's not going to make the bread I make every night, and that's it. nothing too unusual. So anyway, lots to talk about tonight. If you want to call in, I'm going to play some music the first half hour or so. And then if you want to talk to me, the number is 323-843-6160, and I'll be right back.
Silence breaks the silence.
right, welcome back to the show. It is, if you want to call in, the number is 323-843-6160 tonight. As I said, there's lots to talk about tonight, but there's a couple of blind items that I was reading that might be interesting.
Enjoy the silence.
Forgot about that part, sorry. there's a couple of blind items that are kind of interesting. I was going to read first, just for some fun. One is, here's a blind item, and it's about someone. Which movie star sleeps with guys who look just like his wife? It says, he's a movie star, he is married, and he is gay. He is not out of the closet. Out of respect for his wife, though, he only allows a boy in his bed when either one of the couple is traveling. Thoughtful, right? Well, it's rather creepy because the last couple of guys he has been with bear a strange resemblance to his wife. So is he picking the boys because they resemble his wife, or did he pick his wife because she resembles the kind of boys he likes? Hard to say, but in either case, he has no intention of coming out of the closet anytime soon. Oh, and yes, they are practically boys. He likes them young, but is pretty careful about them being of legal age. And the other one is, there's one more that's interesting too, is, where is it? If I can find it. Fuck. Well, I had it a minute ago here. I don't know where it is. Anyway, the other one was basically saying that there's a celebrity, a female singer, former A-list singer, whose celebrity boyfriend, she came home and found him on the sofa with another man. However, she didn't mind it because she came home with another woman. And these people are both actually not out of closet either. But the interesting thing is her name has the letter B in it. So I'm wondering, is it Mel B? Is it Beyonce? I mean, who is it, this person? Anyway, so if you're curious to know what this kind of thing is, I like to talk about the gossip sometimes. Anyway, so but anyway, it got me to thinking about closeted actors and closeted actresses and closeted celebrities in general, and how there's so many closet cases in Hollywood and in the music industry altogether. I mean, there's so many people you'd be shocked to know that are gay. Now, when I was younger, I actually knew a famous actor, and I'll tell you who it is in a minute, but I knew a famous actor, and he was not out yet. And I knew him because I met him very young. I think I was 19. And we became friends, and just more than that eventually. But anyway, he was visiting from out of town for a workshop in Dallas, an acting workshop, because he was pursuing theater and stuff as well as his TV stuff he did. Anyway, and so that's how I met him here. And so we hooked up, whatever. But eventually he and I remained friends over the years and throughout my relationships and stuff as well. And so anyway, he ended up being outed because he was found out by a tabloid in the Star magazine or something like that. And he wasn't a huge star, but he was a B star, I'd say. But anyway, and now he's completely out. But his name was Chad Allen. I don't know if you knew who Chad Allen is, but he was on the show Home. He was on Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman. He's you know, been in several things. He's lots of gay stuff now because he's openly gay now. But he was in the closet then. But I knew him before the case, before he came out. And I remember how difficult it was for him because he had to pretend to be straight still at 19 years old, had to pretend to be straight and had to pretend to like have girlfriends and everything else to protect his image or whatever. And he was a bigger star then than he ended up being later, obviously. But he was, it was sad because he was always just very kind of, you know, torn about being out or not because it would hurt his career. And it did hurt his career to some degree. But especially if you're a huge actor or something, like if you're someone like Tom Cruise or someone like Will Smith or, and I'm not picking these people at random, and, you know, people like that whom have been rumored to be gay, or John Travolta, for example, whom have been rumored to be gay, and have plenty of evidence to the fact that they are gay, but they still remain in the closet, they have wives, they keep up the charade, you know, what is the fucking point? And, you know, I think obviously the point is that they're afraid of losing their careers. Well, I mean, how long, you know, career, I always say a career does not love you back, right? A career does not love you back. So all you can do, I mean, maybe through success and money, if you don't look at it that way, but in the way that love really matters, a career can't love you back the way a human being can. So to protect one's career simply because you're gay and don't want to come out of the closet because you're a famous actor, like I knew, excuse me, before, then I think that it is certainly, it's just ignorant and stupid because ultimately you're going to be found out that you're gay, whether you admit it or not. it's going to come out one way or the other. And you can be so safe and careful one way or the other, right, for so long. But, I mean, ultimately, it's going to come out that you're gay. So I think it's just really ridiculous to even go through the trouble of pretending all these actors and actresses and singers and songstresses whom are in the closet but won't come out. And the other thing is that, you know, when they don't come out, when they stay in the closet, number one, makes it seem like there's something they should be ashamed of. And number two, all the kids out there, like teenager kids, lesbians and gay kids and whatever, whom are gay and have no real role models to look up, not as many as heterosexuals do. They do more now than before, but they don't know that this person's gay. And if they knew that they were gay and they came out, then it'd be a lot, it would mean a lot to that person. And they would actually be able to look up to this person and say, wow, this person's gay. They're loved and beloved and famous and wealthy. And if they can do it, so can I. And, you know, that's why we have all these fucking suicides by gay kids these days, because they feel worthless. And so I think it is incumbent upon someone who is a famous actor or actress to come out when they or a reporter or a famous celebrity of whatever kind, but someone's well-known, beloved, whatever, to say, yes, I am gay, because all those people who don't like gay people begin to say, wow, if he's gay, he's pretty cool, or she's gay, that's pretty cool, then I've been misjudging gay people. I need to look at them closer and decide for myself what gay people really like, instead of continuing to prejudge them based on misconceptions or prejudgments based on what I've experienced in the past or whatever people have, you know, experienced. So anyway, I don't know. I just think it's interesting that people still in this day, 2013, there's still all of these actors and actresses in the closet. Famous people too, okay? And I do know some famous people who are in the closet. I just want to say, I don't know them personally, but I know of them through people that I know in the industry that are very, very gay. And you would never, ever, ever guess. But these people have, as they said, wives, husbands. They have their beards, as they're called. And, you know, they used to do that all the time in the old studio days, you know, in MGM days and the 50s and the 40s, when the silver screen days, when the movies were, was impossible to be gay. You couldn't be gay at all. That's why Rock Hudson hit it, and that's why Montgomery Clift hit it. That's why all these other actors and actresses hid the fact that they were gay or lesbian, because it wasn't okay or acceptable at all in those days to be gay or lesbian. So it definitely would have ruined their careers. But we're not living in the 1940s or 1950s. We're living in 2013, and it is no longer necessarily dangerous to be openly gay like it was in those days, nor is it necessarily a career killer. I mean, you know, it may initially be, like, for example, with Ellen DeGeneres on her show when she came out, and I think it was 1993 or something. I remember watching the show, and she came out and said she was gay, and her rating, she was like the number one rated show on TV or whatever, and her ratings went plummeted from that point on, because there's so many fucking bigoted people in the world who hate gay people. And the fact that even though they'd watched the show that she had been on for years and years and years and episode after episode, and she was beloved and she was welcomed into their home, so to speak, through the television every night or every Wednesday or Tuesday, whenever it came on, once they found out she was someone that they didn't think she was, they turned her back on her. And to me, it's no different than someone that you know, like a friend or a relative or whatever, discovering you're gay or discovering whatever, something that you're hiding about yourself, about you, and then deciding that, well, they can no longer love you or be close to you because they have decided that you are no longer worthy of their love. And someone who truly loves you will not do that, obviously. And then obviously it's a lot to ask of someone who is a fan or whatever, you know. I'm not saying they need to love the person that way, but I'm just saying that for them to turn their back on someone that they have loved for so long and then all of a sudden just decide that they're no longer worthy of their love because they're gay, you know, really shows that their character is lacking and they have no integrity as a human being. So hopefully people will, you know, understand that when people do come out, that unfortunately it is not, well, I mean, fortunately it is not, does not mean that they are someone different. When people do come out, they are the same person that they were before they came out to you. So if someone comes out to you and says, someone you've known for years and years and years comes out to you and says, okay, look, I'm gay and I didn't know how to tell you, I'm afraid you're going to reject me, blah, 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 and then you prove them right, then how can you blame them for spending all those years not telling you that they, you know, were gay or whatever the case may be? So one has to remember that that person, that they're exactly the same person they were before they told you as they are after they tell you. The only difference is that you didn't know another side of them in terms of who they like sexually. That's it. And does that really fucking matter what someone wants to do sexually? No. As long as it's with a consenting adult and it is, as long as it's consensual and is with an adult, then there's no fucking business of anybody else what somebody else does in bed. It's no one's business. It's not the law's business. It's not religion's business. It's no one's business. So to disown someone or hate someone or determine that someone is not worthy of your love because they're gay or come out to you, really, as I said, shows a lot more about your character than about the person who's coming out to you. And I find it sad. I mean, I know when I came out when I was 14 to my mother and to my grandmother, because my grandmother lived with me, she, my mother was very, I don't know what's the word, she was very upset. And she wasn't upset because I was gay so much as everyone around her was telling her, well, you can't let him be gay. That's wrong. That's disgusting. That's evil. It's a sin and blah, 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 blah. My grandmother was telling her that and her family was telling her that because they were all religious. My mother herself did not feel that way. But she was, you know, malleable, and she was sort of led to say or led to believe that the way that she should handle this was to send me to therapy and to make me go see a therapist, and always because I had an absent father or whatever the case was. You know, those are always the excuses people use to explain away homosexuality as being something that's changeable. But anyway, so she did. She sent me to a therapist, and I went to see the therapist. And the therapist was a woman, and, you know, we were talking, whatever, had a few sessions. And so finally, like the third or fourth session, the therapist tells me, you know, excuse me, she asked me, well, so what is it you feel when you see a woman, and what is it you feel when you see a man? And I said to her, well, when I see a woman, I see aesthetically, wow, she's beautiful. I can see the beauty in a woman, you know, of course. I can see the beauty in her shape and their facial features, their body, their breasts, their hips, their, you know, what the thighs, whatever it is about the woman, I can see visually what is sexually appealing about them, yes. Aesthetically, I see that beauty. But nothing sexual happens to me when I see a beautiful woman. Nothing. I don't get turned on. Nothing happens below the waist, okay? Nothing. So when you see, so she asked me, happens when you see a good-looking guy? I'm like, well, then I'm like, I get turned on. I get that feeling inside. You know, you get in your, you know, you kind of your, the adrenaline starts to rush, and, you know, you get a hard on, and you get, you know, flustered, and your heart starts beating faster and all those kind of things. You get turned on. That's what happens when I see a hot guy. It's just like anybody else who would see a hot guy who was heterosexual would react or whatever. So I explained this to her. She goes, well, have you ever thought that instead of actually feeling what you're feeling, to just ignore the feelings? And I sat there thinking, wow, this bitch is an idiot. And I was 14 years old, by the way. And I was like, this bitch is an idiot. But I said to her, I said, you know, I've never thought of that. I said, you know what, I'm going to do that. Now on, I'm just going to ignore the feelings. I'm just going to ignore them. And so I just sort of like patronized her, but she thought I was being serious. And she's like, yeah, just do that and just ignore them and just move on and just, you know, just focus that energy on women instead of men. And blah, blah, blah. So I was like, oh, my God. So after that session, when I was going home to my mom with my mother, she was driving me home. She's like, so how did it go? Whatever. And I was talking to her about it. And I was like, so she told me this. And she said, just ignore it. I was like, yeah. She said, okay, so what do you feel about that? I said, I might be going back to her. She's an idiot. And she's like, you're not going to go back to her? I was like, no. Why am I going to her? I said, there's nothing wrong with me. There's nothing wrong with me. I am not the one who needs to change. You are the one who needs to change. You and my grandmother and my family, whatever, need to change, not me. So I said, you know, I'm not going back to see her ever. So if you want to go see her, fine, you go right ahead, and because you obviously need it worse than I do, I told her. So anyway, and so she wasn't happy about that. But I didn't go back to see her. She used to go back to see that woman, even for like a follow-up visit or whatever. She wanted me to do like a closing visit or something. I said no. And so then I said I wanted to see it. So my mom said, I want you to see a therapist. You want to see a different one, that's fine. So I went to see another therapist. But this therapist was not anything like the other one. She said, basically, on the first session to my mother, who was in there with me, she said, look, your son is gay. he's not going to change because he can't. He is as gay as you are straight. And he was born this way. He was born this way. He's not going to change. So you can either accept it and you can have him in your life, or you can fight him the rest of his adolescence until he's an adult and have a, probably a very strained or poor or no relationship at all with him once he reaches of age. And so that really woke my mother up, both in the fact that she could lose me if she didn't stop trying to change me into something that I wasn't, and also in the fact that she realized that it wasn't something that I could change, that it was who I was. So even though she had all these people, my uncles, my aunts, my grandmother, whatever, based on their own personal moral idiocy, based on their own personal prejudices and bigotry, basically, and religious bias, once she stopped listening to what everybody else was saying, listened to her own inner voice, listened to what she herself felt and thought about who I was, she was fine with it. And she herself, when she was in high school, her best friend was a lesbian. Her name was Peggy. My mother's friend's name was Peggy, and she ended up working for Ross Perot when she got older. Anyway, but she was a lesbian, and she was a known lesbian, and my mom was still friends with her, and she didn't care that she was a lesbian. And so she also knew his mother gay people as well, I think. So she didn't have a problem with gay people, per se, until her son came out as gay, many years later to her as an adult. I mean, when she was an adult. So people can really sway your thoughts and make you think things that you yourself wouldn't think when you're in a stressful situation, or in a situation when someone comes out or whatever to you, or something that goes against what you've been taught. And so it's easy for you to kind of fall in line with what everybody else is saying and to bow down to the pressure. And it really is just peer pressure. I mean, peer pressure happens to adults as well as to adolescents, not just to kids, and so it is peer pressure. And so instead of listening to what everybody else around you is saying, all the chatter and all the nonsense that people are saying, if you agree with it, that's one thing. If you agree that, for example, in this case, that homosexuality is evil and disgusting and wrong and whatever, and you think that's true because that's what you really believe in your heart, that's one thing. But if you are listening to people just because that's what they're saying, because they're your family or whatever, listen to the person it's coming from. Your child will tell you, your kid will tell you that they're gay. They'll tell you why they're gay, because that's how they were born. They'll tell you you've always known that they're gay, blah, 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 blah. It's always the same thing over and over and over again. Every time you ask a gay person, for the most part, I'd say 99.9% of the time, when you ask a gay person, about coming out or whatever, or being gay, 99.9% of the time people will say, well, I always knew I was gay since I was like very, very young. I didn't really know what it was, but I knew I was gay or whatever. Well, that's exactly what everybody says, because that's the same experience for everybody, because that's sexuality. It is inbred in you. It is born into you, whether you believe it or not. Whether you think sexuality, and that's just like, people say, well, to be heterosexual, people always say, I'm trying to get my thoughts straight. People will often say, look, to be heterosexual is the way that God intended or whatever, because they say they come from a religious standpoint, okay? And so let's examine that. So if God intended all people to be heterosexual, then why do homosexuals exist? That's the first question I have to ask of you. And so their answer is usually, well, homosexuals choose to be gay. Homosexuals choose being gay over being heterosexual. Really? So we choose to be ostracized, and we choose to be hated. We choose to be second-class citizens under the law. We choose to be beaten and murdered sometimes. We choose to be passed over for jobs because we're gay. We choose to be all of these things that go with being gay. We choose that over getting married, having kids, and the family, and blah, 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 the traditional family that you would normally see a heterosexual have. We choose all of that over that when it would be so much easier just to be gay. Straight, I mean. Really. So does that really make any fucking sense to you? I don't think so. I mean, if you think about it, why would anybody ever choose to be gay? I mean, and that really honestly is all you really need to understand about it. I would not have chosen to be gay if I had had a choice when I was born. If I was in the womb or whatever, and God said to me, if you believe in God or whatever, or something said, whatever, asked me, okay, do you want to be gay or straight? Do you really think I would have said, oh, well, I really want to have a much harder life than I have to have, and I really want to have a much more a life in which no one understands why I am the way I am or who I am, blah, blah, blah. yeah, that's really not what I would have said. So, and I don't think anybody would ever ask to be different. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with being gay. I'm just saying that, you know, to be so different than most people is not something that anybody would ever choose to be. Unless you have, like, some sadomasochistic desire to have pain, emotional pain, experience emotional pain through your life and other kinds of pain and bigotry, then there's not, it's not something that people would ever really choose. So to say that gay people choose to be gay is just ludicrous. And but the other thing, other side of that is, you know, when I argue the point about it is that I don't even think it fucking matters. You know, let's say for argument's sake that gay people chose to be gay. Okay, let's say that gay people choose to be gay and it's all a choice and all those things that people say about gay people choosing it is true. Let's say that for that is true, which is not, but let's just say for argument's sake it is. Okay, so if that were true, then all gay people are choosing to be gay. What the fucking difference would it make anyway? Why is whether it's a choice or not make any difference to whether someone is entitled to certain rights or not? That's what I would like to understand. Whether it is a choice or not, which it isn't, but whether it's a choice or not, it shouldn't have any fucking I'm sorry, my brain's dead. It shouldn't inform at all the rights that these people that we should have. Either you have equality for all people, or you have equality for no people. I mean, equality means everybody being equal. And so, when you're a gay person, it's not something that you have innately. You have to fight for equality in this country if you're gay. You have to fight for it. And it is not something that is given to you. And the reason you have to fight for it is because there is a lot of bigotry and a lot of religious people out there who don't want to allow gay people to have the same rights. So, and of course, people will say often, you know, oh, well, being gay, you do have the same rights. They say you have the same rights. For example, let's talk about gay marriage. They say, well, you know, you do have the same rights. You can go marry a woman if you want. You know, you've got the same rights to get married if I do. Well, fuck you. I don't want to marry a woman any more than you want to marry a man if you're a man, a heterosexual man. How do I? The difference is this. No, we do not have the same rights. The reason is because we want to marry someone that we love. And heterosexuals marry people that they love, and they have the right to do that. A heterosexual is going to love someone who is of the opposite sex. A homosexual is going to love someone who's of the same sex. So no, we do not have the same rights at all. So to say that is just stupid. And, you know, I am married. You know, as I've said before on the show, I am married, and I got married in Connecticut in 2009, and we've been married since. And so I am married. It's not that I can't get married. I have been married. It's legally recognized in Connecticut. If we lived in Connecticut, we would have all the same rights as everybody else does in that state legally. But it's not recognized in states that do not recognize gay marriage, like Texas, where we live. So my point is that, you know, to say that gays want to be, you know, different and want to choose a completely different lifestyle, if you want to call it a lifestyle, than other people is ridiculous. And let me tell you something else. You know, what do I want? What have I always wanted? I wanted to have a family of my own. And I want to have my husband and myself and a kid or two and a dog and a cat. In a nice house, a good career. I want to retire and be able to travel again and do all the things I've always wanted to do that you can't do when you're working all the time. So, I mean, I want all the things that everybody else wants. You know, I want to have a good life just like everybody else. And you ask any gay person, they're going to want the same types of things, not necessarily such a domestic life, but they're going to always want to have a good life, to be loved, and to have, you know, friends or family around them, whatever. They're going to want to be able to have enough money to survive and to enjoy life and have a nice place to live and have all the things that most of us want. So we're all the fucking same, but people are constantly trying to make us different for, you know, their own desires and their own means to their own ends because it serves them well, specifically politicians or whatever. So people often try to make us look all so fucking different, but really we're all the same. And I know that's so trite, but I say that about so many things too, about being gay, about being different races, about religion or whatever the case is that divides all of us. You know, I think that we're all the same. I don't think it. I know that. And we're all connected. We're all the same. It's not, I'm not even talking new age stuff here. I'm talking even just very basic earth stuff here. I mean, so, you know, when you do something to someone else, when you harm someone else, when you put out, spew it hate, hatred or ignorance or bigotry or whatever the case is, then you're not just harming them, you're harming yourself ultimately. And I know that sounds ridiculous to some people, but if it sounds ridiculous to you, then you're not a very evolved person. Just want to say that. I'm going to take a quick break, come back, talk some more. I'll be right back.
Take your
Okay, so I'm back. If you want to call in, the number is 323-843-6160. Just wanted to remind you, if you want to check me out, you can go to offlimitsshow.com. Also on Facebook and Twitter if you want to check me out there. I don't know if any of you heard about this a couple of days ago. There was a dad who discovered his son was gay. His son had not come out to him, his mother. And so he discovered it. And so instead of waiting for his son to come to him, he went to his son and left him a note that was really kind of touching, because it's very rare, especially a dad with a gay son, that you'll find a dad as understanding as this. But it's really short, but it's really sweet and kind. I wanted to read it to you for those of you who haven't heard it or seen it. But it says this. It says, "Nate, I overheard your phone conversation with Mike last night about your plans to come out to me. The only thing I need you to plan is to bring home orange juice and bread after class. We are out, like you now. I've known you were gay since you were six. I've loved you since you were born, Dad. P.S. Your mom and I think you and Mike make a cute couple." So that was the dad is a very evolved man to be one that can be as understanding and openly accepting of his gay son as that, because it is incredibly rare to find a dad that is that evolved. Honestly, the word I want to use is evolved, because to be a heterosexual man in America, for example, is certainly difficult, because or to be an evolved heterosexual man, let me say it that way, because the heterosexual culture, because there is a heterosexual culture, just like there's a gay culture and any other kind of culture. The heterosexual culture, definitely, specifically on the male side of things, is one that really seems to revere and reward machismo. And by machismo, I simply mean over hyper-masculine behavior, okay? And sort of posturing and making sure everybody knows that they're a man and that they're all, you know, they're all studs or whatever. So, I mean, a lot of it has to do with posturing that way. And so in a culture where people, men, heterosexual men generally, are made to understand that that is how they are to behave in order to be seen as a quote-unquote man and to be viewed that way by people, specifically, in my opinion, it's really for other men than it is for women, because I find that women, although they like masculine men, I'm talking about heterosexual women that I've known and friends with, whatever, but they like masculine men, yeah. They want their men to be masculine and take care of them, whatever, to some degree, and look out for them and, you know, think about them or whatever. But I find that they also like them to be the soft side of a man, the gentlemanly side, the kinder side, the honest side, the getting through all of the facade of all the machismo and behind that wall. I think women seem to like that as well and really be turned on by that. So although women like masculine men, I don't think that they really like the whole machismo act. I think that they just want a man to be a man and just be himself. And I think that their definition of a man, from my experience, I mean, if any woman wants to call in, let me know if I'm right, that's fine. But I'm just saying, from my experience with friends and everything, this is what I have picked up. And they seem to want their man to be real, just be a real guy. And to most women that I've seen, it means to be honest and true and stand up for themselves and for their woman or whatever. But anyway, my point is that machismo, that whole act that a lot of heterosexual guys put on about, you know, calling guys faggot or calling guys pussies or whatever, or what are you, fucking faggot, or you're a pussy, you know, all that kind of nonsense is one of two things. Number one, it's either to deflect from themselves the idea that they themselves may be gay or may be more effeminate or may have some more effeminate qualities, whatever. Number two, it is for the other guys. That whole act is not really for the women. It's really for the men. So the men accept them. The other men accept them. The other men are saying, okay, this guy's okay because he makes me feel comfortable by being this masculine dude so that I don't have to feel uncomfortable by being seen with him or no one will have any idea or suspicion that I might be gay or something like that. So not that they are gay, but they may be insecure about being seen as gay. So I think a lot of that has to do with it. So my point is that this kind of machismo, this act that guys put on, and a lot of times goes on with fathers and their sons, and they see themselves in their son's eyes and vice versa. So they feel that their son is a reflection of who they are, and it is a reflection of whom they're seen as by the by the rest of society. So because of this, they sometimes, when their gay son comes out to a heterosexual father, it's mostly, I would say most of the time, not as positive of a reaction as the guy who wrote the letter for his son I just read to you a minute ago. Usually the reaction is far less positive. And I know in my case it certainly was not as positive, which I'll talk about in a second. But, you know, so to have a dad who is that evolved, and I mean evolved emotionally, is comfortable enough with his own sense of masculinity, is not threatened by homosexuality because it doesn't mean he's gay. He doesn't know. He knows he's not gay, so he's not threatened by it. Then he is so evolved that he can accept his son for who he is instead of trying to make him something he's not. And that is a great thing. And that is a rare thing, unfortunately. So with me, and I did a whole show, if you go back in my archives, a very dramatic show, actually, a couple years ago, called Sins of the Father, that I did. If you go back in my archives and look for Sins of the Father, either on my webpage, offlimitsshow.com, or on blogtalkradio.com/offlimits, and go on my archives, you'll look for that show called Sins of the Father. And that entire show is dedicated to my relationship with my father and how bad it is, because he came back into my life after I was estranged from him for a very, very long time. Well, he sort of came back to my life, but you have to hear the show to understand it. But I read you a very long, long-winded letters between us as part of the show, and what had transpired when he found out I was gay. But just succinctly to tell you, you know, I didn't speak to him from the time I was probably, you know, I was forced to go see him in visitation when I was a young, young kid. And then about the time I turned 12, I just got sick of going over there all the time because I didn't like him. I just never liked him. He didn't make me feel good about myself or anything. And so I refused to see him anymore, even though I was supposed to go see him. And so I stopped seeing him about 12 years old. And then I saw him again when I was 19 because of he would stop paying child support before I was 18. And we had to sue him for back child support, which he did pay eventually after he was forced to. And then I saw him for that one day in the court. And then the next time I heard from him was 2 years ago when my half-sister, whom I had not seen or met except for when she was a very – like an infant when I was 12, had tracked me down on Facebook and started talking to me. So we started talking, and anyway, she and I were talking, whatever. And he apparently – I discovered he was a pastor and a priest – a deacon or something like that at a church. And it was highly, highly religious. And so I knew that was a bad sign. And she herself was raised by him, so she was pretty religious. So I told her eventually after we talked for a while and we had a good rapport and everything that, you know, that I was gay. And she's like, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. And she was, like, freaking out about it because she knew how he would feel about it. And so I said, look, it's not a big deal. He's not going to – I just want to tell you first before I tell him. So I wanted to see how you'd react. She said, I'm fine with it, whatever, she said, but I know he's not going to be okay with this. Like, I know. So I sent him a letter. He wanted to meet me in person after I'd start talking to her again. I sent him a letter and told him that before we met, I wanted to make sure he knew and, you know, that I was gay. And I didn't say it in that way exactly, but I told him specifically, I kind of led up to it, told him about my life and who I was and married, blah, blah, blah. But I told him I was gay. And anyway, he wrote me back and said basically I was a demon and I was going to hell and I was evil. And blah, blah, blah. I mean, just on and on. All the things I knew he would say and how he would react, he reacted exactly to the T the way I knew he'd react. He had not changed at all since the time I was a kid. Also, I had told him that if he wanted to have a relationship with me, he had to apologize for what he put my mother through and me through when I was very, very young, like up until 4 or 5 years old, when he would beat my mother, drag her down the hall, and by her long hair and everything else. And and how it affected me. So I told him that in the letter as well. Of course, he did exactly what I thought he would do as well. He denied everything. And this is stuff that I saw. It's not stuff I imagined or dreamed. This is stuff I saw and witnessed over time and time again. And he completely denied ever doing any of it. And so I went off on him. and really let him have it, and said essentially that I wouldn't give a shit if he died and I'd piss on his grave or whatever, essentially. I don't know. You can listen to the show to hear all the details, because it's much more interesting if you hear all the details. But anyway, I told him basically, you know, he's not a man, because he can't even own up to what he did. If he even apologized to me for what he had done, then I would have maybe considered having had a relationship with him again. But he didn't even admit it, nor did he accept the fact that I was gay. So, and beyond that, he called me evil, demon, and Satan, and everything else. So I went on my own and told him all the things I just told you and said, fuck you, basically, and that was it. I wouldn't do it anymore. So I haven't heard from him since, and that's fine with me. My point in all this is that that kind of a man is a man that has an issue of his own, who postures and uses his machismo to sort of deflect his own insecurities. I'm not saying he's gay. I'm just saying his own insecurities about himself, because he could not admit to what he had done. And in my opinion, a real man will always admit to what he has done, good or bad. And yes, he can even be forgiven for some really horrible things sometimes. But to do that, to start that process, one has to actually, to admit it, right? Don't you agree? I mean, you have to actually admit what you did. So, hold on. Anyway, so that was my point about that. So it's really rare that you find a dad who is as evolved as this guy is, was, whatever, and is completely and utterly accepting of their son, even though they know that they themselves will be seen possibly by some ignorant people as less than a man, because of what their son may be. And that's the other thing. I mean, why does being gay have to be constituted being less than a man? That's the other thing that really pisses me off. I mean, you really think that being gay, is less of a man than a heterosexual man? And I think that people who think that way because, I guess because of anal sex, I guess they think if you're being penetrated by another man, that makes you less of a man. And that's all of that is tied into the machismo myth and mythology of what it means to be a guy and not to be a man or whatever. To be dominated means you're not a man or whatever. And to be a man means to dominate someone else. And that is ignorance at its finest as well. Because to be a man, to me, is not dominating other people. And I find that to be the issue I have with a lot of heterosexual guys, especially because they feel in order to be a man, you've got to dominate everybody else. Well, you've got to dominate someone you're having an argument with by talking over them the whole time, or by trying to put them down or whatever. Or you've got to dominate them physically by beating them up. You've got to dominate them by beating them in a game or sports or something like that. That's what it is. But most heterosexual men look at being a man as domination. And that is the problem, and that is the error in thinking that they have about being a man. Being a man, first of all, means that you have a penis and you have balls hanging between your legs. Essentially, that's what being a man is. If you have those things, you're a man, whether you think you are or not. Now, in the existential, a description of what it means to be a man, then I would say beyond that, it is also, as I said earlier, being true, being honest, standing up for yourself, whatever, yes. But dominating other people has nothing to do with how you are, whether you're a man or not, or even being dominated. There are plenty of men that I know who are completely functioning heterosexual and men who are masculine and everything else, who are complete slaves to their wives, essentially. And does that make them less of a man? In some views, it would. But these particular men enjoy doing these things for their women. And so if that's the case, it makes them happy, it makes the woman happy, then who the fuck cares? Who the fuck cares? And so does it make him less of a man? No. It makes the men who look at him as a weakling less of a man to me. And so guys who look at gay guys as being less of men, because that some gay guys, gay guys come in all shapes and forms and all types. So there are gay guys who are very masculine, who you would never know are gay, stereotypically gay. And there's the stereotype, they're very effeminate gay men. And there's guys in between who are just, your average everyday guy, neither one way or the other, just a guy. And so the guys who are really effeminate is how most heterosexuals think about gay men. And so when they see that, they get really uncomfortable. like gay heterosexual men get really, really uncomfortable. Oh my goodness, sorry. Hope you didn't hear that. Gay men get really uncomfortable sometimes when they encounter really effeminate gay men, because it, as I said earlier, brings up all this insecurity in them. And that is what it is really about. When you encounter a heterosexual man who says, oh my God, I can't stand those faggots. You act like that. Those faggots, you know, who are all prissy or whatever. You know, if that kind of a gay makes you uncomfortable, then that means you have homophobia and you have your own issues that you have unresolved. And that applies to gay guys too. There are gay men who feel the same way. There are gay men who hate guys like that too, because they're embarrassed by them, or they think that that's not what a man is or whatever. So it's not just heterosexuals, it's gay men, straight men, it's just a certain section of men in general who feel that way. And I've never agreed with that. I feel like when I see guys like that walk by who are really prancy and prissy or whatever, I don't think of them in any other way as someone who's incredibly, incredibly secure in who they are, someone who is not ashamed of who they are, and someone who expresses themselves in that way. They're effeminate people, and they themselves are effeminate and therefore express it through their femininity, which men and women both have. So it's just like women have masculine side as well. So that's, to me, not an issue. It doesn't bother me at all, because I'm secure in who I am and know that I don't have to be anything other than I am either. And if you don't like it, fuck you. And that's their attitude too, and I admire that. And to me, those kind of guys who are really Nelly guys, I admire them for that reason. So the guys who have issues with them really are the ones who have issues, not the ones that don't. So, and those who are, there's also the masculine gay guys too, who are really masculine and you would never know are gay, quote unquote gay. Well, you know, they themselves can be just as bad, and they can be someone who really is thinks that only being a man only means you have to be masculine and to play sports and whatever else. So there's all sorts of ideas about what is masculinity, what makes a man, and whatever. I just think that what makes a man are the things I mentioned to you earlier, not what society necessarily says. So I'm going to take a quick break. Speaking of my father, this is a perfect song for him that I dedicate to my dad. Be right back. Listen to the words.
Father of mine, tell me, where have you been? You know, I just closed my eyes, my whole world disappeared. Father of mine, take me back to the day. Yeah, when I was still your golden boy, back before you went away. We'll be right back.
All right, so we're back in the last 25 minutes or so of the show. If you want to call in, the number is 323-843-6160, and I'm happy to take your call. So speaking of dads in general, I'm thinking about gay dads and how society frowns on gay fathers or two gay fathers, you know, raising a child, or two gay moms or whatever, raising a kid. And people argue a lot of the time that there should be a mother and a father. There should always be a mother and a father. Well, you know what? Ideally, there would be a mother and a father with a heterosexual couple having a kid, yes. But most of the time, heterosexual couples are split up half the time and only have one parent raising the children, a mother usually, sometimes the dad. So it is often that kids have just one parent. That's unfortunately the norm these days. It's not the norm to have a dad and a mom anymore. It hasn't been since 1958. So unfortunately, that's the way things are. And it's to say that, you know, two gay dads or two gay moms would make less sufficient parents than a heterosexual mother and father is just ridiculous. And let me tell you why. Because when you have a family, whether it is two men and a kid, two women and a kid, or two heterosexual mom and dad and a kid, it's rarely going to be the typical, these days, the typical nuclear family. So, for example, I grew up with my mom, my grandmother, and myself mostly, and that was fine. And I had my uncles around. I had other men around me or whatever that were there when I needed to talk to them, whatever, to some degree. So it wasn't like I didn't have a male figure around me. I did. But I just wasn't someone who lived in the house all the time. Did that make a difference to me? No. I didn't turn out to be a serial killer or murderer, an axe murderer, whatever, rapist. I turned out fine. But people think that it's absolutely necessary to have one mother and a dad. Well, you know, what do you say? So you say it's not okay to have, you know, just one parent. What about single moms? Most moms these days in this world, not just in America, but specifically the United States, are single mothers, and they have to raise their kids alone because the dad has divorced them and married somebody younger, or just divorced them and gone off with some other guy, or divorced them and was in prison, or got killed, or whatever the case may be. There's a million different reasons that there could be a single mom. Now, does it mean that that mother is not or cannot meet all the needs that that child has? No. I don't think it matters of the sex either, if it's a boy or a girl. Obviously, that mom can still absolutely meet the needs of that child because my mom did for me. So I don't see why it's such a big deal. Now you have two dads, for example, they'll say, well, you need a mother. Well, a lot of people need mothers, but they don't have them. And for example, if you're going to talk about adoption versus, let's just talk about adoption versus surrogacy for a second. We're talking about gay parenting. And you have two gay dads, because that's typically what people have an issue with. Let's say you have two gay dads and they adopt a child, okay, through the adoption system. And so people will say, well, let's say it's a girl. They're going to say, well, who's that girl going to talk to about things that a mom should talk to her about or whatever? You know, well, yeah, the kid can talk to their mother or their grandmother or their aunts or their best friends of the parents or whatever. There's always going to be a woman around that can tell them what they need to know, whom will become a surrogate in a sense about those types of things that they themselves may not know about. I mean, but specifically being gay men, they're probably going to know anyway about the women's stuff anyway, because we hang around so many women as it is. But even if that's the case, there's always going to be somebody around. So the dads in that particular instance can absolutely rely on other people for things if the case ever even came up. It may not even be an issue at all. But if it did, there's always ways around it. And would you rather that child, that girl that these two gay guys adopted, remain in a foster home and age out of the system until she's 18 or 21 years old because no one ever decided to come and pick her? Because instead of her being with a couple of gay men whom are committed and married and loving and kind and, you know, whatever, non-abusive and everything else, instead of being with a couple of gay men like that, you know, she's going to spend her entire lifetime in the system. And, you know, everything I've ever heard about the system is not good. So it's not somewhere you want to live the rest of your life or your whole life, or, you know, until you're of age, I mean.
So I think that it's a ridiculous assumption to say that these two gay guys are worse off for a child than the adoption orphanage or whatever you want to call it, they call it these days. So it's ludicrous that you would want a kid to remain there instead of being with two loving parents. So loving a child, to me, is the key. If you love a kid, if the two parents are loving, or one parent, whatever the case may be, if the adoptive parent is loving, non-abusive, and not off the rocker, and they can provide to the kid for the kid, and they have a real vested interest in raising a child through thick and thin, and they want to love this child unconditionally no matter what they do, then, my God, why would you not want that kid to be with those people? I mean, come on. There's no reason for them not to be. So hopefully people, you know, you'll agree with me on that, but I certainly think it's ridiculous that people actually even have an issue with it at all anymore. But they do, so... All right, so that's all I've got to say tonight. If you want to catch me later in the week, feel free. I'll be back, and we'll talk then. Have a good night.
all the things that you did.
The hardest part was figuring out where to go. I didn't want to explain military life before talking about what I needed. Safeguard Veterans connected me to people and resources that understood military life. That made taking the next step easier.
You served others. Let your community support you. Visit safeguardveterans.net and click on your city. Safeguard Veterans. Any door, the right support.